Hello, my name is Whitney Miller, and I am the University Records Archivist here at MSU. I have worked at the archives for quite a while, and we have recently learned that you have quite a story to tell us. So we are here today to get you to share. So I'm going to start by saying that today is September 9th, 2011, and I would ask you to share your name and where you're from, when you first were aware of Michigan State, and what brought you here.
Well, I thank you very much. I hope to be able to satisfy your curiosity about some of the material that I have available, which we'll talk about. My name is Diane Wright. I came to Michigan State in the fall of 1952. I had graduated that spring from a small single-sex convent school in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is where I was born and raised. So coming to Michigan State with its multiple student body was quite a change. I also considered the Catholic University in Washington, D.C., where they were kind enough to offer me academic assistance. But I chose Michigan State because it was a little closer to home, and I was the first one in my family who had ever gone to college. So being a little bit closer to Grand Rapids was attractive.
Now, when you got here on campus that very first day, what do you remember?
Meeting two roommates whom I had never seen or heard of before. Moving into the dormitory at North Williams, there were three of us in the room. At that time, housing was crowded enough that there were always, almost, three people in a two-person room. And met Marilyn and Judy. Marilyn was from Flint, and Judy was also from Flint. And I think they had known each other, but I was there.
Now, did you know what you had planned to study, or were you undeclared? Or
I came to Michigan State intending to be a research physicist.
Wow.
And I didn't graduate as a research physicist, though I do have a math minor because I took all the math courses that I could get my hands on. But when I left here, I had a major in history, political science, and economics, and a scholarship at the University of Chicago Law School.
Quite impressive. Now, I understand that you were quite active in the student body and with activities on campus, and that with that workload that you just mentioned, must have been quite busy for you.
It was busy, but it was fun. I became involved in the, at that time, all-college student government and was elected the representative to ACSG from North Williams, which is where I lived. And that was the fall of my sophomore year. That would have been 1953.
So you lived in Williams for your freshman and sophomore year?
And my junior year. Okay. Because at the beginning of my middle of my sophomore year, I became the RA for the first and second floors. And it was of great help to me to be able to register without having to pay dorm fees. And so I stayed on as RA, but then did move to the sorority house my last year.
Very interesting. Now, Williams, what was that? Was a single-sex dorm?
Oh, yes. And I don't think there were any non-single-sex dorms on campus at that time.
I think you're right. What was life like as far as socializing with the boys?
Well, most of that area of North Campus, Williams, Yakeley, Mayo, and Gilchrist were the four big dorms on that section of the campus, and they were all female dorms. The male dorms were primarily the East and West Shaw area, and I think there was a Phillips Hall, as I recall. But we met the boys in classes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in the things we did, which is one good reason to do things.
Right. So you were here during a very interesting time during the history of Michigan State. Partly, we were coming up to our 100th anniversary, We were getting ready for that. One of the other interesting things that really was a big deal for the residents of Michigan and the residents of colleges in Michigan was the proposal to change the name of Michigan State College to Michigan State University. And I believe that the actual name,
Michigan State College of Agricultural and Applied Science.
Right. And the proposal initially, to my understanding, was just to turn it around and call it Michigan State University and then drop those excess words. However, that's not really what happened. So 1954 was approximately when we first started to hear things about the name change. Were you cognizant of that in 1954?
Oh, yes. Remember, I'm on the all-college student government. In the legislative piece of the work, there was an executive session or an executive body, branch, whatever you want to call it, and the legislature. But the legislature was the one in this environment that actually got things done. The judiciary primarily heard cases involving on-campus traffic violations. Mm. That was mostly what they did. The executive talked and made speeches and signed letters and things like that, but the legislative body was what got the work done. So here I am in the legislative body as a young sophomore, and this is late 1953 and going into 1954. So up comes this noise in my ear, if you will, about this name change business. And I got involved, or interested, I guess would be the right word, because I thought, well, yeah, a university is a body made up of colleges, and we are certainly a body made up of colleges. Why aren't we called a university? So I asked those questions and followed it because it was a big fight about it in 1954. In the legislature, there were people in the state from some of the higher institutions of learning who were opposed to that. And the legislature was divided, and eventually the whole project was tabled. So along came 1955. Fall of 1954, of course, was the beginning of my junior year, and I, at that point, had been made speaker of this legislative body, the House of Representatives, if you want to call it that, and so I wielded the gavel, and one of the first things I did was appoint a committee to look into what this name change business was all about. So that committee did some work and we all came together and said, well, yeah, this is a project worth pursuing. So in late 54, early 55, I put together a proposal, called President Hanna's office, and I had met him before on various occasions, but I called his office, made an appointment, went in to see him, and said, this is what we'd like to do. Support this name change business. And he said, oh. And I said, can you support it? And he said, no, I can't do that. He was recalling, of course, the fight that had taken place the previous year and the possible harm to the university if he made a very vocal plea, if you will, for mm-hmm. that change to take place. And I said, would you agree not to oppose it? And he said, oh, of course I won't oppose it. And so we put our plan in place. And the plan was, basically, to enlist the parents of Michigan resident students by writing a letter to them and explaining the problem and the cause and the arguments for the change. And as they received that letter, they were asked to write their legislators, because that was where the activity had to take place, in the state legislature, both the House and the Senate. And at that time, of course, we didn't have computers and fancy stuff right. like that. I'm not sure where we actually got the list of parent names. Frankly, today, with the privacy laws and all that other stuff that goes on, we probably couldn't have gotten it, but we did get it in 1955. And I recruited up and down Sorority Row people to type, because there was no way to make automatic labels for all these thousands of letters that we were going to write. And the women who participated, we took over a typing studio, and I suspect it was Morrill Hall, but I'm not positive. And we had use of that, I had arranged for use of that typing studio, nights and weekends and so forth. And I had these 20 or 30 women sitting at typewriters typing these labels on the, or not labels, typing on the envelopes that we were going to use to mail the letters to all the parents.
Before we get into some of the details of the letter itself, probably should mention that there was quite a bit of opposition to the name change, and you would not think that it would be such a big deal, but it really was, and a majority of that opposition came from University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on why they objected?
Well, I, of course, am not privy to why they objected exactly, but I can give you what my impression was. Mm-hmm. They were concerned because we had joined the Big Ten some number of years before, though not that many. They were concerned, perhaps rightly so, about invasion of their territory.
Right.
And funding, which probably still is an issue in the state legislature. So they had those kinds of concerns. I'm sure that there were some surface issues raised, the most prominent of which was, oh, it's going to be confusing. People are not going to be able to tell the difference between one and the other and so on and so forth, which, of course, was quite facetious. But I think the main concerns were the impression that we were equal to them among potential students, research grants, and all those other kinds of things, and we were. And their fear that by changing the name we would have greater influence in the legislature than we currently had. Those are my ideas. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether those are legitimate or not, but that was my impression of why they opposed.
That's certainly what was part of what was reported. Some of the newspaper articles at the time were reporting that administrators as well as students at University of Michigan were somewhat insultive to the students at MSU, calling them, you know, kids in short pants, and we were just
the cow college
and these types of things. Of course, I mean, anybody I think in an academic higher learning education facility would find that insulting. But do you recall when that type of thing was bantered about, what the students here thought of that? Or did they just not care?
I think they cared, and I can attest to that in a minute. I believe that they were of the opinion that, go away and don't bother us. That would be my feeling from almost 60 years later.
Right. So going back to the drama of how the letter got produced. So you would say that, of course, the government, the student government, was behind it, and John Hanna, the president of the college at the time, was not opposed to it. Would you say that it was pretty unanimous that the students were all for this?
I can speak for the student representatives who were in the legislature, because I had almost daily contact with them. And I would say it was probably unanimous in that body. I think that something I'll tell you about in a few minutes indicates that there was broad campus support for it. And I'll tell you about that in a few minutes, but there are a couple of things to discuss first.
Okay.
So I wrote the letter. and the president of the All College Student Government signed it and actually transposed it to ACSG letterhead and signed it and sent it to the printer. And meanwhile, I have all these typing envelopes going on. When it came back from the printer, I was given a copy, and there was a typo in transposing what I had written to the ACSG letterhead. I can't remember how serious it was, or whether it was factual, or whether it was just plain typographical error. But I said to the president, "We are not sending this." And he said, "Well, it's just a typographical error, so what?" And I said, "Look, if we send out a letter with an error in it and ask for support of becoming a known university, if we send out a letter with an error in it, we don't deserve to be." And I said, "It's got to be redone." And he said, "Well, who's going to pay for it?" I said, "The student government will pay for it if we have to, but it's the printer's fault." So I don't know who did pay for it, but it got fixed. And the student government funded the postage on the letters that went out and funded the printing of the letter. Whether they funded it once or twice, I can't tell you. But the letters went out, and the parent letters started coming in. And when the legislative body of the state was asked to vote or voted on the proposal, they passed it overwhelmingly. And it was widely thought that there would be a bigger battle, if you will, mm-hmm. in the Senate. But the Senate passed it 23-2.
But they did, am I right in thinking that they did keep the agriculture and applied sciences part of it?
I think so, but mm-hmm. 60 years later, I can't swear to that one way or the other. One of the other things that influenced it was what you alluded to early, and that was the broad campus support. One of the other things that ACSG did was give the students an opportunity to sign a petition. And we eventually got 11,000 names on that petition to change the name. And I had the honor of presenting that at the state legislature with the assistance of some of the male members of the student body. Mm-hmm. And there was a picture in the state, I think it was in the state news, but it might have been the state journal, I can't remember for sure, on a nice article.
There was multiple versions of the picture. Some were cropped and then some were enlarged. And according to some of the clipping files that we have, the picture was ran widely throughout the state. And we also have at the University Archives, at the MSC record, there's a picture of you and the other people involved and the letters and petitions being signed at the Capitol.
Right.
And so it was quite an event.
I have in my collection, I don't happen to have it with me, so I can't show it to you today. I have in my collection an original newspaper clipping, and that's why I can't remember for sure what picture I clipped out, whether it was State Journal or State News, I don't remember. It's a little different than the one that you have in the record, but it's essentially the same event.
So you were at the Capitol,
mm-hmm.
and you presented the petition, and lo and behold,
It passed.
Okay, then what?
Well, the next thing that happens is that the governor has to sign the petition. However, Menon Williams, who was governor at the time, was out of the country, so Phil Hart, who was the second in command, signed it. And it got real.
Got real.
Interestingly enough, the graduating class of 1955 was asked whether it was to take effect, I think, the 1st of July, long about that, was asked and voted to accept their diplomas late so that their diplomas could say Michigan State University instead of Michigan State College. The yearbook that was published the year I graduated, which was 1956, was the first one that was published, first yearbook for Michigan State University.
Yes, I looked in the I looked in the 1955 yearbook to see if I could find any talk or mention of the possible change, and there wasn't anything.
No, because it had been voted down at about the time the 55 yearbook was being put together, and which of course was the year before, for all intents and purposes. But it got done.
It did get done, and then much later, goodness, good number of years later. I think it was 1963 that we became just Michigan State University.
Okay, so yeah. It was originally passed then, yeah. Michigan State University of Agriculture and Applied Science. Yeah. I did not remember one, and I was out of the state by 1963, so I was not aware of any kind of controversy. About that probably was not terribly controversial.
No, I don't think so. Not at that point.
By 1963, I wouldn't think that was
the hump had been gotten over there.
We got over the hump in spring of 55.
Yes. Well, we're set with Michigan State University now proudly, so that's very good.
And the shirt I'm wearing today, you will notice, says MSU.
It does say MSU, but you know, one of the things that you can buy on campus, especially when they had the sesquicentennial, was some of the historical logos that said MAC, MSC, different things. And
so, I have a few of those things in my collection.
I think it's important that people remember that part.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, that is pretty much the story of the name change and your involvement in that. Did you have any other little anecdotes to add about the whole process and interesting things that might have happened?
The thing that probably affected me most directly was that it sparked, I guess would be the right word, my interest in politics, which continues to this day.
Very good. Well, one question that I would like to ask that is a little bit beyond this particular topic was you were here on campus during a very big growth spurt. And tell me a little bit about how you saw the changes at the university just for the time you were here, and then your impression of now in 2011.
One of the things, I'll tell a story which may or may not be amusing, but it is to me. Remember I told you about my two roommates that I had never seen before. And I started to go to class on the first morning, and I was looking for the Kedzie Chemistry Building, which at that time was, well, the building is still across from what was the dairy at that point. And I remember walking across campus with one of my roommates, Marilyn, as a matter of fact, and we had this heated argument because I was looking for the chemistry building and she kept pointing to the dairy and saying that was the chemistry building. And I said, no, that can't be the chemistry building. It's not big enough. But we did finally agree that Kedzie was really Kedzie. Size. One of my memories. And in that era, interestingly enough, which is a significant contrast from the way things are today, nobody rode a bicycle. It just simply was not done. We walked. And if you had an 8 o'clock class on a winter morning on South Campus and you lived in North Williams, it was mighty cold to get there. But did it. At that point, there were Quonset huts on South, what I call South Campus. I don't know what you call it today. But I'm sure they're long since gone and probably replaced by very modern, lovely buildings.
They were there. At least some of them were there until they built the Breslin Center. There was they were there when I came to school in the early 80s.
So we went to school in Quonset huts on the South Campus. Of course, one of the things that had happened was that following the war, there had been World War II, there had been a significant influx of veterans, which had done the explosion piece. So we were just kind of in 1952, 55, settling down, if you will, from that massive explosion. And as I look at the population today, it's round numbers, 42, 45,000 in that range. That's not significantly larger than it was when I graduated. I think there were about 40 when I graduated. And even though there are lots more buildings and lots more, at least seemingly, more activity, I'm not sure that there are that many more students. I mean, maybe 10% or that kind of a range, but not 200% of what it was in 1950. So, of course, there have been expansions to the stadium, expansions to everything since then. The library was, well, what's now the museum was the library, and the library was built while I was here, or under construction, I think, while I was here.
You mentioned that you had some interaction with President Hanna at the during all of the name change, mm-hmm. And that you had met him a few times before. What was your impression of him?
Oh, he was a fine man. I liked him a great deal. And people who became my in-laws, though this was long after this period of time, had been close personal friends of John and Sarah Hanna. And I exchanged messages with them until the day they died. Of course, my former husband's father was a prominent member of the Ag Econ Department here, and so they had a lot of involvement in world travel and representation of Michigan State around the world.
That'd be Carl Wright.
Yes.
Well, I think that I've asked all my questions. Would you like to say anything about anything at all related to MSU?
Yes. a very good education. Fine professors with whom I kept in contact after I graduated. I enjoy coming back. It's difficult to find my way around campus these days. I took a drive just before I came over here, and, you know, it's all different. It's new. Stadium, of course, is vastly expanded. Enjoyed football. And funny thing, I love basketball now. But basketball was not anything that anybody who knew anything about what was going on around here paid much attention to in 1955 or 56. I mean, I don't think I ever went to a basketball game while I was here. One of the interesting things we did, we raised money for the Olympics. We had Carol Heiss here for an Olympic skating program, Olympic support skating program, and that would have been probably 55, maybe 56 in the winter, at the old ice arena. And, of course, that was all we had until they built the new one. But it was a good fundraiser, and we had a nice time. I think student government sponsored that, as I recall.
Well, thank you.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.